Hola, me amigos. Is it me? Mes amigos. Mis amigos. I did do Duolingo, actually, for about almost a year. I think I did do it for a year. It was just around lockdown. I think everyone was doing Duolingo then, weren't they? And I was doing Spanish, but you would never know that I'd done any, you see, because I felt that, I don't know about you, has anyone else done Duolingo? I know some other people were doing Welsh that I knew, and I know one of my other friends is doing Greek and Spanish. And I don't know about those apps. Do you get on with them? I'm not sure that I felt like, initially, I felt like I was learning quite a... I'm sorry that we've started talking about Duolingo without really much introduction to today. So let me just say hello, happy Tuesday. I'm late again, but there's no apology. You know, it's Easter holidays, isn't it? So let's just gloss over the fact that it's Tuesday and not Monday and go back to the fact that I opened up with Ola and it made me straight away think of Duolingo. So yeah, so basically I felt like at the beginning I was going great guns, and then they did something where they updated the app and I didn't like the circuitous route you had to do, and I felt like I was repeating things too often and some things not enough. And then I realized after doing it for a year that I was just a little bit addicted to it, like a stupid computer game, because I don't do computer games. I don't do app games, Candy Crush or any of that. So I don't have any of those. So Duolingo for me was the closest that I came to having any sort of app type gaming experience. And I have to say, it felt like a bit of a waste of time. So I stopped it. I turned it off. But it was a big deal because they make you, they're very clever, aren't they, those apps? They, you know, I had a streak. I had like a streak for like many, many, many hundreds of days. And it does feel like you're losing something or you're giving something dramatic up. It's like, are you sure you want to leave? You know, it's a bit like, what else does that? Lots of them do that, don't they? Gyms do that, obviously. Are you sure you want to leave? There's the famous Friends episode of that as well. What else does that? Anything you unsubscribe to. Why do you want to unsubscribe? Because it's shit and it's annoying me. But there's no option to say that, is it? It's either, you know, too much this, too much that. Anyway, how the devil are you is what I'm going to say. It's back to being windy and cold again. What is that about? It's now April, so really come the fuck on, Bridget, as good old Bridget. What's her surname? Jones, obviously. Of course it's Bridget Jones. That's what I was going to say. So I was thinking about what I might chatter on about today to you. And it was about two things. So there's two things that I'm going to discuss. And when I say discussed, I mean talk at you in the fashion that I have been over the last few months. It's April already. The first one is about positive and negative thinking. So let's get that out of the way. So I've got a tendency to overthink. I don't know about you. And like my husband constantly just says, well, just don't think about it. Don't, you know, forget about it. And my brain just can't do that. I can't just switch off. And I think I mentioned that on one of the other episodes about what I have to do to switch off, which isn't just simply go, okay, I'm switching off now. I need to actually be somewhere that's calm and soothing. So overthinking anxiety exists a lot in this world. And I was thinking, what is the best thing for mental health? And I think we are pushed down the line, aren't we, of, oh, you must think positively. You must think positively about everything. And that's quite hard. And it feels like you're sort of beaten over the head with it and that you're some sort of real loser for ever having a negative thought enter your head. And it's quite, like I said, quite tiring to be positive the whole time. And again, that's just reminded me of that episode of Friends where, do you remember when she had, it was Phoebe, I think, that had a boyfriend that was played by Alec Baldwin that was just so positive about everything all the time that it becomes really annoying. So I think you can have too much positivity. I do. I think it's a balance, like we were saying in other podcasts. But also I think, is it more, the question for me really is more, is it that we're having positivity shoved down our throats? Or is it that we shouldn't have to constantly try to be positive and that we should just try to be less negative and aware of our negativity? I was reading something the other day, which, if it is true, is frightening, and I do kind of think it possibly is true, is that, you know, we as humans are 70% of the time unaware of how negative we are in our speech patterns. And I think that possibly is true. I think we do lean mostly towards thinking negatively about something, but it's a protection thing, isn't it? So I get that. I get that. But I do think that you do have to keep that in check. But I also feel that it's impossible and annoying to suggest that you just have to be this ray of positive sunshine all the time. It's just not feasible. It's just not feasible. But I do think that, I think someone called them the three C's, and I can't remember what they are. What are the three C's, Joe? I think they were, off the top of my head, something like catastrophizing was one of them, which is easily done, isn't it? It's easy to just, when you're overthinking, just to build and build and build on something that starts off quite small and make it into a mountain. And I think commiserating, if you're constantly around people that are negative and you constantly empathize with them, that can be quite draining. Concern, being concerned about everything, is obviously quite draining too. Criticizing, clearly negative. And although criticizing doesn't, is it always negative? That's the thing. I mean, some things do need criticizing and you do need to think critically about things. And just general complaining. I mean, I do, that does drive me up the wall, the general complaining, I have to say. Especially when there's absolutely feckle difference that it will make. You know, if you're in a restaurant and the service is slow, instead of sitting there whining about it or then moaning to everyone else about it afterwards, just get up and leave the fucking restaurant, you know. You're allowed to do that, you know, it doesn't... It's a choice. It's a choice, isn't it? So people that complain a lot, I don't hang around much if I can help it. And I try not to do much commiserating with people that do that as well. Because the other thing is, if you're one of those kind souls that empathizes and listens and takes on board other people that are catastrophizing, you end up just being in the same headspace as them. So that's not helpful either. So the basics of what I'm saying is that I think we have positivity pushed down our throats, and that's kind of impossible and sometimes annoying. And that actually, I think if we just keep a bit more of a check on our negative feelings and thoughts, that it would lead to positivity by the very nature of keeping tabs on old Mr. Negativity, because negativity is that... devil on your shoulder, isn't it? That's whatever's happening is going, oh yeah, but that could happen. Oh yeah, but this, yeah, oh, that's never going to happen. Oh, you're having a nice time, are you? That's not going to last. That's that thing on your shoulder. So I think don't listen to it, basically. Or listen to it and go, yeah, okay, thanks for that advice. I'm not going to take it. I'm going to believe that things will work out fine. And they usually do, really. And I think even sometimes when things... in my past, and I'm sure in yours, that, you know, things that you think at the time are disastrous, step backwards in your realm, end up, when you look back on them, being the things that have brought you the most joy. So, you know, who bloody knows? That's what I say. Who knows? Just another thing, while I was skimming the internet yesterday, as one does, I noticed a little thing. It came up from, I don't know what it was on, actually. I don't subscribe to it, but you know when you get those like sponsored things that come up? And it said that the smell of cut grass, which I love, I really love the smell of cut grass, is actually a distress signal. It's a distress chemical release by the grass. And I was like, oh, it's maybe a bit sad now. Now I'm thinking, like, oh, it's all going, I'm dying, I'm dead, help me. So now when I smell grass, that's what's going through my head. And now I need to check myself because of what I've just said, which is I'm thinking negatively about something that's actually positive. So it's all bollocks, really, isn't it, is what I'm saying. But my husband, as you know, he does teach science. He's the head of science at a secondary school. So I said to him, I said, hey, I've just read this thing that it says grass, the smell of cut grass is actually a distress signal, a chemical distress release. Is that true? And he said, well, he said, I know that acacia trees communicate with each other. And I was like, what? What? What they do? What is this about? Trees communicate with each other. I did not know. And he said giraffes, and this is true. I have looked it up since then. He said giraffes have learnt to graze off of acacia trees downwind because the trees, once they start getting munched on, emit a toxin that's a tannin, and the technical term for the tannin toxin is ethylene gas. It releases it, which warns all the other trees and makes all of their leaves taste bitter and not very nice, so that the giraffes don't want to eat them. The animals don't want to eat them. Isn't that clever? I thought, and it blew my mind. You know, science does, doesn't it? If you're a simple girl from Southeast London, yeah, it blew my mind, and I was like, whoa! How clever are the giraffes? You know, they're not just long-necked beauties. They're also intelligent in that tiny bit of head that they've got, which is a very tiny bit of head. But they've worked out how to trick the trees. But more importantly for me, and in my head and imagination, is not that the giraffes have worked out how to trick the trees, but that the trees communicate. So I said, wow, does that mean, because I was trying to make it make sense in my head, does that mean that the trees can smell then? Because I'm like a child when I hear these things, and I respond to them like a child does, like, oh, what does that mean this then? And bless him, he looked at me and he said patiently, as he did, with a slight sort of look of sadness in his eyes, as he looked at me, the one he's chosen to be his wife, didn't he? Not really. It's just a chemical reaction. There isn't any intelligence required. And I said, oh, right, okay. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense, because thick people can smell, can't they? Which he thought was hilarious. So my reasoning is, of course, smelling isn't an intelligent thing. It's just an olfactory chemical reaction and requires no intelligence. Hence, it doesn't matter how dumb you are, you can still smell. So I'll leave you with that. I hope you have a good week, and catch up soon.